Don't ask me to rank you guys. How about that?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your most favorite hour of your Halloween week and beyond. It's Under the Radar, presented by Topps Project 70, I think. I don't even know if that's run out, but we're giving them a shout-out anyway, because there's a crazy Babe Ruth card out now by our friend Alex Pardee. Anyway, with me as always, your friend and mine,
Hey, how's it going?
My friend and yours, Ian
Kahn. What's up?
What's up?
Good to be
What's
back.
What's up, guys?
We didn't know when we were going to do this again.
Yeah, and then Nando wrote, I missed doing the show. So I was like, let's do the show. Let's do it tomorrow. That's the only way to do it with these guys. You just got to say, okay, tomorrow, 3 to 4. And then we're now here we are. And we're doing it. And Nando was like, well, I'm not sure. And I was like, all right, we're doing it 3 to 4. And he's like, all right, I guess I got to show up.
And then DVR messed around, and now we got to do a shorter show because of his internet.
Internet.
Blame Comcast.
I blame Comcast. Actually, I will say one thing about Comcast, having been on the road through many years. Comcast has used to have a really good DVR. That's all I wanted to say.
That's not Derek Van Riper. Choice of words. Yeah, I was gonna say.
They had a really good DVR, really good whatever it is, DVR, like video recorder.
Yeah, they got a really salty DVR right now.
Digital video recorder. That's what it is. It's a digital video recorder. There we go. It's under the radar.
Our rundown today is DVR copied and pasted our text exchange from last night and just dumped it in. So It might take a second to go from topic to topic because there's stuff in there that's, you know, just general chatter. I do want to get into DVR did a very, very early mock or actual draft. Is it a mock draft or an actual draft?
No, it's a real draft. It counts.
Really?
Yep.
Did you do it at AFL?
Nope.
You didn't go to AFL.
I didn't
None
go.
None of us went to AFL.
No.
Greg Jewett.
I could not go.
Sorry, it's not really it's AFL, but it's like the First Pitch Arizona, the Ron Chandler Baseball HQ brainchild, where a lot of people get together and do baseball. I can never go because of football. I assume DVR can't go because of rates and barrels, and Ian texted us that he's just too good for it and didn't want to talk to the commoners. So
yeah, that was not right, but yes, I couldn't go. No, I couldn't. Unfortunately, I couldn't go. I really wanted to go, and I'm very hopeful that there's going to be one in Florida. And then for that, I will go because I think that's where, if it's happening, where Labor will be drafting next year.
Nice. And you're the reigning champ of, are you the reigning champ of Labor?
AL Labor, yes.
And the reigning champ. And what else are you reigning champ of?
Dynasty League One. Derek Van Riper is the reigning champ of Khaki.
That's it.
Yeah. But we have some good stuff here. I think I have an answer to the question of the umpires. I'm sort of excited to get into that.
Go ahead.
And we're not going to talk too much about the playoffs because DVR, Eno, and Britt are doing a daily podcast of what's happening. So it's going to be more general stuff, but we're going to have to talk a little bit about last night and a little bit about this and a little bit about that because it's fun. It's baseball. It is fun.
DVR, whenever you do a show with Britt, are you like, I can't believe she stooped to this level to do a show with me and Eno? Do you just marvel at that every day?
Yeah, it is surprising.
She's pretty cool.
Yeah, she's on her way to win an award, potentially, like a real journalism award, the Edward Murrow Award. And I'm out here like digging into spreadsheets, talking about Ty France.
Yeah, but you won the FSWA Best Podcast Award. So it's not like, you know, if she could be on any podcast, Rates and Barrels is the podcast to be on, right?
Probably debatable, but yeah.
Why? What other ones should... Well, anyway, shout out to Britt. Like, I remember, like, way before we started The Athletic, I was reading her on Roto World. Like, you know these names that we're working with now? And you're like, oh, man, I used to, like, I know who you are, like Dan Connolly, and now I'm slacking with you, which is kind of cool. I don't know why. Like, just back in the day when this, like, you know, the Baltimore Sun's Dan Connolly reported. You're like, man, this guy.
We were, you know, we were going to do an After Dark, but I can't do After Dark. It screws me, man, because I get so excited and so juiced from doing the show that I don't end up in bed till like 3 a.m. It's like being, it's like doing theater again because, you know, it's like doing a show. You do a show and you're like, hey, that was fun. I'm going to do a show and now I'm awake. So, you know, and then I got to wake up at 7 a.m., which is no fun, you know, to go get life going with kids and stuff.
Makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
Got to come back to the West Coast, Ian.
It's true. But here. Iced coffee.
All right, let's get into this. I don't understand what robo-umps thing you want to talk about, but the floor is yours, all right. Sir.
All right, so here, I think I have a plan here. I'm curious.
And then we'll get into DVR's draft, because there's some really crazy stuff, I think, in this draft.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's so everyone's talking about the robo umps for balls and strikes because of the terrible job of some umpires, not all umpires, but some umpires. But people are worried, like, is it going to slow down the game? Like in the league that they were doing it in, pitches would go right down the middle and it would be like, you know, and the computer would get it wrong. So they're going to have to figure that out. But here's how I think they could do it. You have a regular game with an umpire behind the plate. Then three or maybe four times over the course of an entire game, the bench can challenge a ball strike call. So it's not every pitch is checked, but there's a pitch that feels like it's 2 inches off the plate. And then you know, in tennis where they go and they challenge and it becomes like this really like hot moment where it's like, oh, is it in? Is it out? Is it in? And it's like by the corner of an inch, it's in, or by a quarter inch, it's out. And it's this very dramatic moment in tennis. Have that same experience up on the screen. You see the pitch go and it's like an inch outside. They change the call from a ball to a strike. Is that not the answer to the question? I feel like that's the answer to the question.
Yep, that's the answer, because you can't go completely to automated balls and strikes anytime soon. The tech isn't ready. You don't want big calls, especially like the check swing that ended the Giant season. That shouldn't end a season. There should be a few calls like that. It could be called strikes, called balls and strikes, and check swing appeals that you can appeal, yeah, three per game max. That'd be great. You get all three right, maybe you get a fourth, whatever the numbers are. I don't care. The key to all of this, and this is why it works so well in tennis, is speed. The problem with MLB's replay system, aside from the number of plays that aren't reviewable, are the number of things that take 2.5 minutes to sort out. Well, let's go to the headset, and they bring out the two people with the backpacks and the stuff over their shoulders. Like that, they need to clean that up. They need to speed up that process. You should barely know that a review is happening when you're watching on TV. You should barely know there's a problem when you're at the game watching in person when something's reviewed. It should be that quick, and it can be that quick. It's just a matter of making that process more efficient.
Yep. So, I mean, I think, I don't know why no one's come up with this yet, unless someone has come up with it, and you can write to us on Twitter and say, yeah, and you probably heard it over there because this guy said it already. But I don't think so. And I think that's the, somebody gets a Manfred. Who's got Manfred? Let's get Ken Rosenthal. Actually, I'm going to call Doug Glanville right after the show. I'm not going to call him on air, but I'm going to call Doug Glanville because then he could do it. Yes, this is very good. I think I have an answer.
Can you imagine how excited Doug Glanville was when actor Ian Khan asked for his phone number?
Are you serious?
And now every week he's got a field to call from.
Listen, no, I don't get to talk to Doug. But Doug is awesome. What a great guy. No, he was a fan of Turn Washington Spies. I don't remember. I think he reached out to me on Twitter once and I was like, you're Doug Glanville, man. Like, holy smoke. And then we, you know, exchange phone numbers. And yes, we've never traded. We've never played in a fantasy league together. But I go back to Stratomatic Baseball. He was a 1 in center field, AA, 1-17 speed. That's what he's a huge Stratomatic fan, Doug Glanville. Anyway.
So wait a second, you call it Turn Washington Spies, not just Turn?
Yeah, because the show's called Turn Washington Spies.
This is the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast, the podcast about fantasy baseball. I'm surprised you don't call it that, Nando.
And it's called Turn Washington's Spies because it's not about Washington, it's about his spies.
If you say Turn, though, everybody knows. Oh, he's so humble, first of all, but also if you just call it Turn, I think everybody at this point knows.
I guess. It was called Turn originally for the first season, and then they changed the title in season two.
Are you a celebrity when you walk into the old... I mean, I know you're a celebrity wherever you go, but like when you walk into the old 76er, you walk in there and they're like, oh, we got your table here, Mr. Khan.
Yeah, that's the one spot. There. That's it.
Is it really? Not Mount Vernon?
No, whatever. All right. Umpire, automatic umpire idea. I think we have the fun solution here. And I think it'll be cool, too, because then the thing will come up and it'll be like half an inch off the plate and they'll go ball four. It's really ball four, not strike three. I think it'll add some excitement to baseball. Can't hurt.
All right. DVR, do you mind bringing that up on Rates and Barrels so it can hit that baseball real audience, and then maybe someone's listening, and then you just go to the commissioner's office.
I'm calling Doug Glanville right now.
Yeah, you'll get pretty far just calling Doug.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it will. I'm very excited.
All right, cool. Okay. Well, you know what? I know we got a lot of... I just really want to hit this Todd Zola draft real quick. And we can come back to some other stuff. We can weave this in. But DVR, before we... Like, what's the weird rule here? Because there has to be some kind of weird rule here for the way this first round went.
You have to send all the picks in by mail to a P.O. box in New Hampshire.
No, I mean, like, there's got to be a scoring quirk, right?
No, it's a 5x5. This is just a satellite league for the NFBC. It's a 15-teamer. It's loaded up with some very good NFBC players, and then there's a few other people like Todd and I who are in there that are kind of trying to climb up the ranks and hold our own with this group. I think we've done this for 4 years together now, and we're always kind of in that top half, just outside the money, living in that spot where no one cares how you're doing. You're not getting destroyed every year, but you're not winning. You're not cashing. So that's a problem. And the problem we've noticed year over year with this team, we always end up with a ton of pitching, and we're always chasing hitting in fab throughout the season, every single year. So we tried to shake things up a little bit with our approach, and I'm not sure if we got far enough away from the typical builds that we've put together, but I do like what we put together from the 11 spot.
Oh, your draft with Zola, I get it now. I thought Zola was running this draft and you were part of it with industry people, but you're teammates with Todd Zola.
Yep. Co-manager. I'm on board with the co-managing thing. I'm doing that for the football pentathlon that I put together for the first time. And the cool thing is, so obviously since I moved, I'm not in touch day to day, week to week with people I was spending more time with in Madison. So I'm sharing it with Mike Doria, one of the football editors at RotoWire. So it's like a weekly check-in with someone that I probably would have lost touch with. I would have checked in once every few months. So just that aspect of it is cool, right? Just having like the DVR, friendship side of it.
I love it because I keep in touch with the guy, and I'm like, I love it because I don't have to set lineups. The other guy will do it.
Yeah, no, it's also good to have an error check. We've talked about that in the show before. We don't have to go into the pros of sharing the workload. I mean, it does help when you get into the dog days of summer. Can you imagine the relief if you've been running all your teams by yourself? Imagine that relief some weekend in July. You want to go to the beach, or you're at the beach. Oh, I gotta get home. I gotta do 4 hours of fab. Oh wait, I've got a co-manager that can actually take care of this. Like, hey, I'll get this one this week. You get this one this week, and then we'll work on it together most weeks. There's so many ways it can pay off. But yeah, the Zola draft. It's a draft that's been going on for a while. I don't know if Todd is an original member, but yeah, he added me a few years ago. And it's just fun to go through this exercise without projections, you know, without any sort of groupthink on ADP. Tons of back and forth, G-chat and text, just trying to figure out, what do we do here? Like, how far is this guy going to fall? You have no previous auctions or drafts to look at to really understand, like, what the rest of the room is trying to do.
There's some weird. So, what's Shohei Ohtani? What's his deal? Can you move him back and forth?
Yeah, same rules as last year for Ohtani. If he's a hitter at the beginning of the week, then he's a hitter all week, and you could take him out on Friday and play somebody else. If, like, say he's pitching on Sunday and he's going to get a day off Saturday, so you want to play a different bat on Friday, you're allowed to do that. If you pitch him in the beginning of the week, then he's a pitcher all week, and you can't sub him in on Friday. That's how they're handling it again next year.
All right, so. I don't know. So here we go. I'll just read the first round. And I don't know. It was a weird looking first round. It's not how I expected the first round 2022 to look. First pick, Max Scherzer. Then Tatis, Trey Turner, Walker Buehler. Man, that's a lot of Dodgers up top.
Yeah.
Turner, Buehler. Vlad Guerrero went fifth. Shohei Ohtani went sixth. Juan Soto, seventh. Bo Bichette, eighth. Jose Ramirez, ninth. Mookie Betts, tenth. Corbin Burns, 11th. Bryce Harper, 12th, Garrett Cole, 13th, Kyle Tucker, 14th, and then on the turn, it was Acuna and Ozzie Albies. And then Mike Trout was the next pick on the comeback for the second pick of the second round. I did not expect to see Max Scherzer going first, Ian. What's
no,
up with that?
No, I find that weird.
And Buehler, fourth. That might even be weirder, actually. Matt Medica?
No, he's not in this draft.
All right.
You know, it was DVR sent us this thing and didn't tell us what team it was. So I went through all the teams trying to figure out what team was DVR and Todd's. And
I can read the text exchange here. You guessed seven.
I was like, well, because I knew it was one of these six or seven teams. Like, I could eliminate a bunch of them from choices that were made. Where I was like, there's no way these guys made that choice. You know, and looking up and down, like just weird choices that were sort of like, huh, I don't get that. Like, really? Like, Bobby, one, I hate to be hard on people, but Bobby Witt in the seventh round, that strikes me as bizarre. You know, I mean, Wander Franco, the same player saying Wander Franco in the fifth, Mondesi in the fourth, and Tyler O'Neill in the third. And so it was, I just was like, the DVR and Todd aren't going to do it that way. Like they're just, they wouldn't make that call. So I was able to eliminate a bunch of teams. And the team that I liked the best was team 14. I don't know if I liked it the best, but I thought it was DVR's team because I had Kyle Tucker. And I know how much Derek loves Kyle Tucker. Yeah,
look
and
at that
Trout.
Start. Look at those first four.
I know. I really like that.
That's almost like
four,
an Econ team.
But I'm not a huge fan of Alec Manoah so high. At five with the fifth round pick, I can't get behind that at all.
Yeah, it's like you get so you get Tucker, Trout, Judge, and Eloy Jimenez as your first four.
Awesome,
like,
whoa. Love it.
And then Alec Manoah and Trevor Rogers, and then you come back with Jesse Winker. You're like, all right. And then it's Jonathan India, Framber Valdez.
India's kinda... good. India's good. I like India. I think he got a good price on India. I think that's a good place to get Jonathan India. If you look at his numbers,
you could have had Luis Severino.
Yeah, man, I'm not buying Luis Severino either. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I don't know where I want to buy pitching because of these pitchers feel like they're in the wrong spot for me.
Well, the pitching thing, I feel like it's easier to quickly re-rack and value pitching for the next season than it is to value hitting. That's probably why the pitcher-hitter balance that I talked about, the struggles we've had, that's why it's played out that way. Like I just have more confidence in which pitchers to take and when than I do in the hitters. Because there's so much more that could go on with a hitter, right? A hitter could end up in a more hitter-friendly environment and be the same guy and just be better because of that. The lineup could get better. The lineup could get worse. All those types of things could happen. And then, of course, there's questions of health over the full season that are quite a bit more, I don't know, they're more challenging to figure out for hitters. How much of that hamstring injury that this hitter played through, how much did that actually impact the numbers too? Like all that kind of stuff, I think is a little harder to sort out. It takes more time to sort it out, at least, even if it's not that much more difficult. But there is a dead spot with the pitching. At least I thought there was right around the fifth round, like late round five, early round six. There are names that you like, but you're not getting a lot of track record. You're pushing guys up to their highest ever ADPs, or you're getting guys that really showed us some scary stuff over the course of 2021, like a lot more downside than we expected, right? So just to put a few names on it, we're talking about like Blake Snell, for example. He falls, like, but how good do you feel about Blake Snell in the seventh round? Like a lot of his success late in the year came with a shorter arsenal. And I think when it's come up before, I've said he's probably going to tinker and try and get something back, try to get the changeup back, try to get back to three pitches for 2022, right? Like Blake Snell's not sitting there today going, yeah, my 2021 was great and I'm good. I'm just going to play video games and do the bare minimum this offseason. It's probably, hey, I got to get this figured out. Otherwise, I'm going to get yanked in the fourth and fifth inning all the time and that's going to cost me some money long term. But you see guys like that. Tyler Molly was a seventh rounder. Luis Castillo, who I think
that's the one guy I see that I was like, I like that price.
Yeah, in the sixth round, I think he's...
I like that price.
He kind of stands out to me as a guy that fell a little that probably makes a lot of sense. Dylan Cease at a career-high price in the sixth round, right? Ranger Suarez is up in that group. I mean, there's some slippery players in that
like
group.
Ranger
guys
Suarez,
that you could look at and go, wow, I like that player, but I don't necessarily like that player going that early.
Yeah, I don't like most of this. Like, I keep coming back to Dalton Varsho in the 10th. I don't understand that. I just can't. I cannot wrap my head around that choice.
I actually like that. That was on our radar. Yeah. We didn't end up doing it because
at 150.
Yeah. We were looking at Varsho versus Grandal, I think was the, that was the question. Cause we had our choice coming back through. And I think Grandal, even though he had knee surgery, He was mashing
huge.
This year. I mean,
he was mashing.
Mashing. Great lineup. I think Varsho.
Why are you on Varsho at that level? I mean, he doesn't have the playing time yet.
Will he be outfield with catcher eligibility? Is that what you were thinking?
I think so. I think the playing time takes a pretty big leap over a full season. The second half, he was pretty much a regular for them, and he was crushing the ball, and he still brings that speed. I've always liked him as a hitter. I think he can be better than average in batting average, kind of decent in power for a catcher. Clearly above average in terms of steals for a catcher eligible player. And I think because the playing time will level out, I think the runs and the RBIs are going to be solid, even in a bad team.
A lot
team.
Of outfielders in Arizona that are coming up.
Yeah, I think he's a priority for them. And maybe they trade Carson Kelly or they do something else and open up some time behind the plate, but I'm not too worried about the playing time. Now, I think the question if you like him the 10th, do you like him much earlier than that? I think the current answer is no. I don't want to push him any earlier than that, but I felt like that was a good time. I thought Varsho versus Grandal, based on how your team was built, was a conversation worth having.
Wow.
I wish this was color-coded.
Yeah, sorry I didn't color-code it.
I've missed out. I've missed out on that. I noticed that Moncada fell to the 11th round. Did that surprise you that he fell that far?
Yeah, and I'm sure at some point he was among the names we were thinking about, because I think
you got him, didn't you? Oh no, that's 14. That's the team that I really liked. 14.
I like him at that price because playing time shouldn't be an issue. This is a White Sox team that didn't have a lot of infield depth. Moncada's the kind of guy that can max out volume wise, could play 150 plus games. You get those great counting stats. I think the question we all need to answer is, okay, so where was the power? Like 2020, he talked about COVID and how that impacted him for a while, and he just didn't really get over it over the shortened season, even though he kind of played through it. The power didn't come all the way back in 2021. He's still young, though. Still talking about he's going to be 27 in May. So it's possible we haven't seen his best power season yet. I think we've probably seen his best slash line, 315, 367, 548. You're not getting, I don't think you're getting that average with that power together again. That seems like that might be a pretty clear outlier. But could he pop 25 to 30 homers again? That's kind of the open question. I don't think he has to make value if he's going to fall that far. So I think he absolutely makes sense as like a mid-round value bat, regardless of whether or not you think the power is going to be there. But I'm curious, Ian, like you've had some concerns about Moncada. You didn't really have him anywhere going into the season, if I remember correctly. So
that's correct.
Are you interested in him at a discounted price, looking at what he's done in the past and looking at what 2021 turned out to be?
I mean, to get him with the 160th pick in the draft, as opposed to, I mean, he was going in the fourth round last year, and I was pretty much on record saying he's spending too much time making records. But no, 11th round is good. I mean, it's so weird. Like it's so early still, but I'm looking and there's like nobody I like at their prices. You know who I kind of like? I mean, like nobody. If you look at team 13, I don't like Simeon so early. I think we talked about this. I talked about this on some shows. Like I'd rather wait and pay for Polanco later. But I like what happened later in the 10th and 11th round and 12th round. I like that those rounds. And the he took Syndergaard in the 10th, Kershaw in the 11th, Joey Gallo in the 12th, and then Clevinger in the 15th. Mm-hmm. Like I think that's the way I'm going this year, is like wait on those guys. Wait on guys who, like, I don't want to pay for Alek Manoah. Do you want to pay for Alek Manoah? A fifth round pick? I mean, that's, hold on, it says 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, he's the 61st pick in this draft.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to give a kid that had, 12 starts? Good starts. He's good. But I can't trust young pitching like that. Can you?
It's harder for me to trust young pitchers, even though I have more confidence in pitchers on smaller samples compared to hitters. It's still hard for me to trust them because I feel like there's always value a few rounds later than that window. That's just a certain spot in the draft where I always like the hitters that are available quite a bit more than the pitchers. Yeah. And if you waited just a little longer, we got Shane McClanahan. Todd and I got him in the 8th round. What's the difference between McClanahan and Manoah at this point? They both have to deal with the AL East. McClanahan gets the slightly more pitcher-friendly home park. Usage on McClanahan actually wasn't that different. It wasn't like if you looked game by game, he was only going 3 or 4 innings. He was used like a pretty regular starter, so I don't think you're giving up much in that regard either. If I'm going to take a young pitcher early, air quotes, I'd much rather do it in that round 8, round 9, round 10 range, which is where McClanahan went, and Logan Gilbert went there too. I know his August was absolutely terrible, so I think there's a little bit of a discount on him just because of a rough stretch for him late in the season. But I thought Syndergaard in the 10th was definitely a value worth taking. Yeah. I thought that was a good pick. I think Syndergaard versus Gilbert was probably something that Todd and I had to at least think about. And this draft happened, or at least that pick happened, before Kershaw got hurt too. So that wasn't a...
What?
At least I'm pretty... No, wait a minute.
No.
That had to be when we didn't know how bad Kershaw was hurt.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Kershaw would be going in the 3rd round.
Yeah, I was thinking about the timing. Some of the stuff that's happened, like it was before Scherzer got hurt. That's why Scherzer went 1-1, obviously.
What do you think, Nando? Nando, do you think that these pitchers are going too early?
Well, here's my problem with the Alek Manoah. And I look, I'm the kind of guy, like, if you whoever team 14 is, I'm sure they have something that's like very solidly Alek Manoah is going to take the next step, and Trevor sure. Rogers is going to continue to excel, because I can play like that sometimes. If you look at the staff as a whole, they started to really get some good stuff toward the end on that team. Like, Alek Manoah is their ace technically. So, like, within the context of taking him in the fifth round, I think I'd be okay with that if I already had, like, my guy. But he is your guy now. So, I don't know, the building around him, I would probably attack it more. Instead, they went, Winker, India, Hoskins with three of their next four picks. But as you go down, like, they got Tarik Skubal in the 14th, which I like. Vidal Bruhan, I have no idea how that's going to play out. For a second there, I thought it was Brusdar Gratterall, and I thought it was great, but I'm getting those two confused already. Off season. Taiwan Walker, great. Zach Eflin could go either way. I know a lot of people like him. Carlos Carrasco in the 23rd, which could turn out to be actually tremendous. Jake Odorizzi could go either way in the 26th. And then Colome. It seems like they don't have enough pitchers, actually, now that I read these all out loud here. They may have just nine pitchers. Anyway, in the context, I don't love it, but as just a fifth rounder, you already have a pitcher in there, I'm totally cool with that move. Not necessarily that particular pitcher, but with that move.
Yeah, we love their top four picks, so it's not a total slam job on 14 at all, because Tucker, Trout, Judge, Eloy is really impressive. I mean, they probably, well, India's going to give them a little
speed. Texas who it is, so we don't, either we can go in on them or we won't hurt their feelings anymore.
No, I like the team. I like the 14 team. Yordan Alvarez, holy smoke, that guy is good. Holy smoke, and he's going to have outfield eligibility next year for sure, right?
Yep. Yeah, he's got it.
I mean, that's got to be that's a nice pick for you right there in the fourth round. It's interesting though. Like, another pick that I really like for you is Alex Bregman in the seventh. I love Logan Webb in the sixth. Like, that makes sense to me. Like,
what's the difference between Webb and Manoah though?
Older, a little bit longer of a track record, much better ballpark / division to be in, I think. Well, I don't know if that's...
I mean, they got their ace. True. So they got Corbin Burns, and they backed him up with a shot on Logan Webb. Like, I could see getting Burns and then taking your shot on Manoah if you really believe in Manoah.
Okay, that might look a little bit different. I don't know. You kind of want to get an anchor to your staff, and I just don't think... But you could look at it this way. Manoah and Rogers, you got two shots at it. Two shots at a possible ace. But there's injury concerns with Rogers. And Manoah's just a kid. I mean, he's just a kid. I don't know. I wouldn't build that way.
Can we go back to Mookie Betts?
Yeah.
Is that crazy fall, or am I missing something?
That's actually, I think they did a little bit of a reach to get him.
Really?
I think Betts falls even a little bit further. You can make an argument for, yeah, I think. I mean, I could see taking Betts at 10 easily. Easily, but I don't see him. I wouldn't take him over any of the guys ahead of him.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Scherzer.
Well, yeah, that pick surprised me. I think that surprised a lot of people. And
yeah,
I think the problem here, if you believe Scherzer is a mid first rounder or a late first rounder, and you think he's the best pitcher on the board, and you got that first pick, well, you have to take him in that spot if you're going to take him at all, because he's not going to be there coming back in two. But I don't see the pool quite like that. I think with Betts, there's a little more of that logic where I don't think Betts was making it back to team 10 in round two. If you believe Mookie is a late first rounder and you think he's safer than a lot of the guys that go on the turn, you don't have to deal with the questions about coming off an ACL like Acuna at 15, which could be a steal depending on how that recovery goes. It's a great unknown this early in the process. If you think he's a lot safer than Kyle Tucker, if you feel like Trout, because of health, doesn't belong in the first round anymore. Like, I can get there. I can easily say that, like, Mookie Betts is viable at 10. I don't think that was a big stretch at all. I think it also comes down to that team being comfortable taking Jacob DeGrom in the second round, not knowing where he's at health-wise, right? I mean, that's one of the biggest mysteries right now as we get into, I guess, what we'll call draft champion season, right? Those draft and hold leagues start up in about, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks. People start getting into those a little bit closer to Thanksgiving, but are you comfortable spending a late first or a mid second round pick on Jacob DeGrom right now, just given what we know or don't know about his health?
Nope. I'm not. No.
No way.
Also,
no way.
If I got to the wheel at 15 and Acuña and Trout are sitting there, I'm taking Acuña and Trout. I mean,
yeah.
If Trout is available, I just can't pass that by.
I don't think that
Mookie Betts had one bad season. I just don't get this.
No, he's had no, not one. He's had two.
A 60 game season. I'm not counting anything.
He was good. He was good in the 60 game season. He was good. It was the year before that he struggled.
Well, that was playing for a contract, you know.
But Mookie Betts' down years are so incredibly good compared to a typical player's down year. I mean, yeah, you lost a little batting average this year, but I guess it was also the injury, right? 122 games. Like, if you crank that up to 145 or 150.
Yeah.
Like, the plate skills are still intact, right? He doesn't strike out a lot. He still draws walks. I think there's reason to believe he can get the stolen bases back up into the high teens, maybe low 20s over a full season with health. I mean, I don't think he's lost that much. He's still 30% better than a league average hitter on a bad hip, and he's still not even 30 years old. So maybe there's some of the, the Yelich doubt kind of creeping in a little bit, since he fell a ton, by the way. But I don't think that situation is quite the same as Betts' situation. I mean, I think an offseason to rest his hip especially gives me a lot of reason to believe he's going to come back and return something, if not in the first round value-wise, very close to it.
Yeah.
I could see Ohtani going first overall. I could see Vlad going first overall. I could see Tatis going first. That's probably the popular pick. It'll be by the time
You can't go Ohtani first overall.
He's amazing. He's a stud at two positions.
Yeah,
for your fantasy team.
But you don't get to use him in two positions. So
you could twice in a week. You could use him as a hitter for 4 days and then a pitcher.
No, you can't.
That's the way you explained it.
No.
He's whatever you use him at the beginning of the week. That's what he stays at.
Right, so fine. I don't know. I mean,
it's not like 4 days on and 3 days off to pitch anymore. Ohtani, I'm hitting home runs and striking out 10 guys in the same game. Ohtani,
yeah, but the strikeouts don't help you. Although I did use him in a number of leagues as a pitcher in August and September when I had injuries, and you could do that. But I don't know. I would take Trey Turner number one right now, even with his really poor job that he, really poor job. He's just such a valuable fantasy player with the speed and with the average and with the power. I mean, he's just a fantastic player, and I would take him over Tatis because injury concerns are not as much. And Tatis did not get the surgery. So another one that was really surprising from team one is Chris Sale at pick 30 in the last pick of the second round. I know it was before he struggled in the playoffs, but even before that, I think that's too high. I have a lot of questions about that team. I mean, I love Frankie Montas. I don't know if I would pick him at 60 right there. But Nicky Lopez in the sixth round, does that seem weird?
Yeah, DBR, yep. Texas, who team number one was too, while you're at it.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Come on, we want to know all these things. I mean, Zola, don't tell me.
He's got some other good picks that he has later on, so it's not a shot at him. I just don't understand the thought process behind Nicky Lopez that early. I mean, ahead of right with Jorge Polanco, I just don't get that. Yeah, I don't understand that. I mean, Jorge Polanco went in the. Did you guys consider Polanco, DVR?
Yeah, he was definitely among the players we were thinking about at that range. I mean, Polanco has done it twice now too, so it's not.
Yeah,
it's not as though 2021 is the career year outlier. I think we wondered if 2019 was that rabbit ball outlier for him. And I think end of the sixth round, back of the top 100 makes sense for him. I'm comfortable drafting him there. I don't know how much I'd want to push him up from there. Like, what's the earliest you would actually want to draft Jorge Polanco?
Top of the fifth.
Top of the fifth. So like 65, 70 overall, maybe at the earliest.
Somewhere in the 70s, yeah. I would go there. Okay. Sure. Especially because of the dual eligibility. It just gives you so many more options. I'm just looking through the pitchers, and like, I don't like any of the prices.
I was thinking the same thing. This is going to be a weird year for pitching. I think my teams are all going to be pitchers in the, one pitcher up top, and then a bunch of pitchers from like 9 to 14, almost exclusively pitchers or something like that.
Well, I mean, even in that area, like, what do we like from the night? Let's look at the ninth round to the 14th round.
Well, I wasn't even actually looking at the people in that range. That's usually just where I hit those guys that I like who have the upside. But yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it's more like 11th to 18th.
I just don't.
Well,
see,
Luis Garcia went in the eighth.
I'm so glad.
All right, Shane McClanahan in the eighth. I guess I just like
old pitchers. I just want older guys who I trust aren't going to get shut down.
Where'd Nestor Cortez go?
He went like the 16th.
There you go. Cortez in the 16th. I would jump him up a couple rounds just to make sure I get him. Sonny Gray in the 10th, I think, could end up being a pretty good deal.
Decent.
Cal Quantrill in the 12th. Could go either way. I love Tristan McKenzie. DVR, you got Tristan McKenzie pretty late for what he's worth.
Yeah, I think there's risk about how he holds up over a full season, and it's kind of like, to me, he's the pitcher equivalent of Dalton Varsho, just in that he had a great half season, and now we just have to see how it plays over a full 162. Can he do it for 30 starts? Can he come out, hold velocity, and maintain command consistently? At that price, I think if you're wrong, or if he goes through a stretch where he doesn't have it, you can at least comfortably sit him down. You're not going to keep talking yourself into playing him in all of the matchups. You'll be a little more careful with him. I don't know if that's where he settles in. I'd be really curious to see where his ADP ends up once we get to the late part of March. But if he's going to sit there in double-digit rounds, I'm interested.
Jeez, Joey Bart went in the 25th.
Casey Mize went in the 14th round, right? To me, I mean, that is there a, I mean, he hasn't had the success of Rodgers.
And Manning went in the 21st.
Right. So Manning was the first one I looked at, and then I was like, oh, where's Casey Mize? There's Casey Mize. But like, we're betting against those guys because they struggled in their first taste of the major leagues. And I guess, well, look, Alec Manoah could be the next coming, right? I mean, he could be Jose Fernandez 2.0.
Where did Pearson go?
Kind of looks like him. What?
Sorry, I'm just speaking out loud now. My mind's going in like a billion different directions.
Yeah, I don't know.
Nate Pearson went in the 24th. Jose Barrios went in the 22nd.
No.
Anyway, continue. No,
Jose Barrero went in the 22nd.
Jose Barrios went in
the... Yeah, Barrios is the fifth rounder.
Yeah. Which is about right. I mean,
I was just testing
one. Lance Lynn in the fifth round, I like. Jose Barrios in the fifth round. Joe Musgrove, I like that. I mean, I guess that's the thing. It's like he took Manoah over Morton, Peralta, Musgrove, Berrios, and Lance Lynn. I don't know, man. I'm not sure about all that.
So it was going to be pretty awkward if Freddy Peralta was still there in the fifth round when it got back to Todd and I. He went a couple picks before us. He went 5-9. So it wasn't an issue. But with Burns, Mullins, Bogarts, and Jordan, it was, you know, pitcher, three hitters. A pitcher in the fifth was a possibility. And for me to go Burns Peralta in the first and fifth, I'm kind of glad that I had a guardrail in the form of Zola to possibly talk me out of that. But I think left to my own devices, if I had that choice, I would have taken Peralta in the fifth.
That makes sense.
I think it's a good fifth round pick.
Oh, I was going the wrong way. So actually I should, to be fair to this guy, to this person, all those guys were taken ahead of him. So that makes a little bit more sense. Okay, cool. Because, yeah, Manoah, fifth. I was doing it the wrong direction, right? Right? So, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. So Manoah came after all those guys. But I still would have taken Logan Webb ahead of Alec Manoah. Maybe I'm crazy, but I would have done that. You took Altuve in the fifth. I kind of like that. I do. I like Logan Webb in the sixth, Bregman in the seventh, McClanahan in the eighth, and Logan Gilbert in the ninth. Okay. Grandal in the 10th, good. Mancini in the 11th, I like. Adamas, okay. McKenzie, good in the 13th. Vaughn, very good in the 14th. Jesus Sanchez, you think?
That was probably more Todd than me, but I think at the same time, I didn't say, no, let's not do that. I think the playing time is really stable for him. He's got nothing left to prove at AAA. I think he's going to hit higher in the batting order there than he'd hit anywhere else. So that bodes well for the counting stats. So I think it's fine. I would say you could give me that pick to myself and I'd probably go a slightly different direction, but I don't hate it.
Yeah, like Nelson Cruz, you could have gotten in that spot. probably. I don't know. Well, you could have done that. Rutschman in the 16th. I rather like that. I think that's the right spot for him. Moustakas in the 17th. I don't know. Kikuchi in the 18th, I like. Lux in the 19th, I love. Pham in the 20th, I really like. Patino, 21, I like. Paddock in the appropriate spot, 22nd round. That sounds about right. Nimmo, good. Kirk, I like. Hura, give up the ghost, bro. And Brian De La Cruz, I don't know much.
What a dick.
Sorry. That's it. Look, I've been off Hura for a good long time, and I just don't believe.
You're 25th round. DVR for his Midwestern bias, basically.
Well, he needs it. That guy needs a trade to the American League, is what that guy needs.
Or Universal DH.
Right. Or Universal DH. That's true. Which definitely could come to pass. But it was rather interesting. We got to get back to some. There's some other stuff on this breakdown that was of some interest. Can we get back to that before?
Oh, so sorry. We were breaking down a draft that people might want to hear. Hey, Ian wants to talk about.
Yes.
Ian wants to talk about Ohtani's award from the commissioner.
That was cool. I was just trying to get things down. Not really.
No, let's talk about Kyle Seager going to the Yankees.
Corey Seager. Corey Seager might go to the Yankees. They were talking about like $340 million. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. Like, there's got to be a better. And I think I would enjoy. Although Correa is a righty, I think Correa would look pretty good in pinstripes. One thing I want to say, I've been very hard on the Houston Astros on this show, but I love Dusty Baker so much. I found myself rooting for the Astros, and oddly, even more oddly, I was rooting for the Red Sox against the Astros. So it's like my brain just doesn't even know what to do at this point. But I want to ask you guys, what do you think about the Yankees keeping Aaron Boone? I'm okay with it. What do you think?
I hate it.
Why?
And I hate to say it because he's probably a nice guy, but it's just not. They need a jolt of something new over there. Like, they just need some new voice, some new whatever. I understand he's like, quote unquote, puppet of the front office. But like, I just feel like they need someone with some fire. You know what I mean? Like, I know he yelled at the umps once and everyone thinks he's fiery, but he's just.
He's not fiery.
He's like faux Torrey, you know, like, and that just doesn't work, I think, when you're that young.
I don't know.
But like, Joe Torrey was like older, sagacity.
I know, but.
You know?
To go from Joe Torrey to Faux Torrey is so good. It made me very happy. DVR, what do you think?
How many managers, tell me which managers there are in the league right now who are loud and fiery and are winning a lot right now? Like, who has that sort of disposition, that personality, and has a team that's just crushing it?
You challenging me?
I'm just asking. Yeah. Dusty Baker?
No
that's
way.
That's not Dusty at all.
Dusty is like, I know. That's why I'm rooting for the Astros.
Brian Snitker?
Nope.
No. Snitker is like Snitker. Snitker. Like,
I'm not saying that's like, what every manager has to be. I'm saying that's what the Yankees need.
I don't know.
Why are they different? There are a lot of rich, you know, high paid players. The Yankees, you get a little
bit of that's their problem.
Because the Dodgers run the highest payroll in the league, and Dave Roberts is very calm. Like, what? Did they not win this year because Dave Roberts didn't scream at them? They won last year.
They won last year in a 60 game fake season.
They won a longer postseason.
30 teams made the postseason.
They also won a longer postseason tournament last year.
It's true. They did. And they are a worthy champion.
Do you think some Dodgers are listening?
No, that's my opinion. Boone has a good. He's good. I if he were free, the Padres would have signed him in 2 minutes.
Ian, what do you think about him not having any loyalty to Phil Nevin?
I think that makes a certain amount of sense. You couldn't have Phil Nevin out there after what happened this year. I mean, he really struggled in that position. I'd have been okay if they moved him to first base, but what they want to do is they want to bring in somebody who can be a tough guy. And, you know, I mean, I understand why they kept him. I do. The team wasn't very good. That was the problem. The team wasn't very good. It wasn't well constructed. They don't play baseball. They play long ball. And it's really not great. It's really not great.
Well, the deadline moves are weird.
The deadline moves tried to help. I mean, I think they're going to keep Rizzo. If they can keep him on a decent contract, I think that would be valuable because he could be good. He could be really good in New York, and he's such a great guy to watch every day because he's always smiling in the dugout. And I think that matters. One more thing I wanted to say before we have to wrap.
Do we have to wrap?
Guys,
or are you calling it?
I'm not calling
well,
it, but I think DVR
go,
said,
right. Yeah, that's right.
DVR said it to go. One thing I want you to notice about Travis d'Arnaud behind the plate. I really like Travis d'Arnaud. I like him a lot. I mean, a former top prospect. If you remember back, he was a top 10 prospect back when I was starting out. Maybe top, like, number 8 prospect.
Back when you were starting
In fantasy baseball.
All right.
Really diving into the game. 2012.
That was very
is
vague.
When I first... No. When I was first starting, back in my day, as my kids always say to me. But watch him when he's catching. Every time a pitcher throws a strike, watch what he does with his catching glove. I freaking love it. He catches the ball and he points at the pitcher and goes, attaboy. That's it. Watch it. It's so cool. And it makes the pitcher, makes him do a better job. Just that energy between a pitcher and a catcher is so important. So I think if the Braves find a way to pull this out, and aren't you glad, DVR, we're not talking about every game. If they can find a way to figure that out, it's going to be Travis d'Arnaud behind the plate that makes the difference. I'm going to say that now.
Yeah, I mean, I like d'Arnaud. I think he's actually going to be a little undervalued going into next season because of the lost time. And it's an extensive injury history, but top to bottom, it's a good lineup in Atlanta. That's probably not going to change overnight during the offseason. And looking at where he went in that league that I did with Todd, I think it was the 17th, 18th round. So very late for a guy that has probably a 3/4 playing time share behind the plate and is an above average hitter.
Yes, I'm all about that. If I walk out of a draft with Travis d'Arnaud as my number one catcher, I'm going to be happy because I'm going to get him late.
Yeah.
Why is Nelson Cruz so late? Why was he in the 15th round?
I don't think people are convinced that he's playing in 2022, or at least they're not certain about it. But if you had to guess yes or no, at that point in the draft, he can retire and you're like, well, I'm out of 15th round pick. So, oh well.
I would go higher with that.
I got so many questions in this draft still.
All right. Well, we'll be back. We're going to be back.
Let's do a draft champions.
What is it?
The three of us together?
No, like the three of us with some other people. Let's just jump in one day.
All of us competing against each other. Okay.
I mean, like, ooh. I don't want to be like, you know, let's invite the listeners. I mean, that would be awesome. I don't want to make it like a thing where it's a listeners league and, you know, we're like, you know.
No, we could tweet about it. We can just share it once we sign up.
Yeah, that's what
We can just start a 150. We'll just do a $150.
I want to do like a $25 one to start, you know?
ask
people to throw in that much money.
They don't have to join.
Holidays coming up, people got to shop.
No, I'm not doing a $25 league. It takes too much time and effort.
A $25 league in November, though, you know people are taking it seriously.
How many people are you buying gifts for this holiday season, Nando?
Yeah, you're selling all your baseball cards.
I have 9 nieces and nephews.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
That'll do it. Nope. $150. That's what we're going to do. We're going to do a $150. That sounds like fun. I would do that. That'd be really enjoyable.
I just want to do it. Like, now that I'm reading this, I'm like, no. I want to come on. Like, I want to do this.
Cool.
No.
All right. So we'll do it. And then we will. And so how often are we going to do this? Every 2-3 weeks or something? Although Nando's going on vacation for a while. So it'll just be when DVR is like, okay, let's do it.
Well, here's the thing. I can do after darks. And it's like, come on, it's November, it's a holiday season. You know, you're a little drunk, you get the lights shining, you know, things are a little more shimmery. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We can definitely do an after dark over the Christmas holidays for sure.
What about the Thanksgiving holidays?
Maybe we can. Yeah, yeah.
We'll be back.
We just, you know, we missed each other and we miss you guys. So we wanted to throw one out there for you and we hope you enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah. That was great. All right. See y'all later.
All right. Well, you can do the ending. Or are you just
yeah, I know. I'm out of practice. For the guy who will most likely be the first one thanked in Brick Giroli's Edward R. Murrow acceptance speech.
Yeah, I probably don't deserve a mention there.
For the man. For the man who has a series of texts from Doug Glanville that just say, sorry, man, didn't even see my phone ring. Ian Khan.
That just reminds me. I got to call Glanville. I'm going to call him as soon as we get off. I'm calling him.
Thank you all for joining us. Yeah, you know what? Shoot us some ideas. You find us on Twitter. If you want to maybe try Draft Champions, if you think Ian's being too rich for everyone's blood, let us know. And we'll do it somehow, some way. It'll be fun. We'll have a good time. Thanks for listening. Hope this is enjoyable. Happy Halloween, everybody. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.